in New South Wales, which owes $30 billion at the moment, and on current projections will owe more than $50 billion by 2012 unless something dramatic is done.
Well, it's an interesting problem, though, because it may be that the new Premier has the sort of fortitude and is an iconoclast like Jeff Kennett was and can just go at it like that, but it'll take an awful lot of courage.
Well, it takes an enormous amount of courage. I mean, Jeff Kennett had two-thirds majorities in both houses.
He did promise a red-hot go. We'll have to see.
Well, a red-hot go is, I mean, Jeff Kennett got rid of 10,000 teachers, just like that. I mean, the thing you have to remember about state finances is that about more than 70% of the costs are actually wages of the recurrent costs. So you can't actually talk about anything sizable to the budget unless you actually tackle, you know, the fact that New South Wales has, you know, more than 300,000 public servants, and unless you actually tackle that. Now, what happened in Victoria in the final years of the Labor government when we had our crisis was that there was a huge freeze on infrastructure spending. So there was a $600 million backlog in maintenance. So the decision that was taken by the troubled Victorian government was to slash infrastructure spending, but to not address the issues with the staff numbers. And I suspect that given sort of public sector unions and where the Labor cabinet has come from, that you will see things like the North West Metro getting shelved. And the thing that will happen is that you won't get the $57.6 billion four-year infrastructure program, which Michael Costa so trumpeted in his most recent budget. You simply won't get that delivered. So there's literally going to be more than $10 billion of capital expenditure promises that either won't happen or will be bailed out by Canberra. And that's when you get the magnificent combination of Carmel Tebbit and Anthony Albanese, who can potentially deliver a federal-state solution here, given they're married and one's in charge of federal infrastructure spending and the other's the Deputy Premier of New South Wales.
Perfect. Perfect.
Well, I remember being up the budget lock-up with Wayne Swan, and Swan finished his press conference and introduced Anthony Albanese, who proceeded to talk about a nation-building infrastructure program, and he started off talking about big projects in Western Sydney. So, literally, he is the man who's rolling out Infrastructure Australia, talking about nation-building. At one level, you could say he's almost channeling Rex Connor. He's got big visions of pipes and pipelines and ports and rail and tunnels and road, and he's got tens of billions of spare cash in Canberra, and you've got tens of billions of missing cash or needed cash in New South Wales, our biggest state. So
it's a match made in heaven.
Well, it's a logical conclusion. I mean, Australia runs the most lopsided federation in the world, where the states do all the work and the Commonwealth raises all the money. And so one of the reasons that we're, for instance, the world's biggest gamblers is because the states have no money, and one of the few things they can do is issue gaming licences. So that's why they desperately have all issued gaming licences over the years. So we do need a fundamental shake-up where the feds give more money to the states because the states are the people who need it. I mean, we're the only country in the world where the federal government doesn't spend a dollar on public transport. But you can't imagine the perception of a Labor government in Canberra bailing out a Labor government in New South Wales being allowed to take hold. So that's the big challenge that the Labor Party faces. How do they engineer a federal bailout of New South Wales without being blasted for doing what actually in reality probably needs to be done, which is more money from Canberra to all the states?
Now, looking at another troubled economy, the US economy is, of course, in kind of all sorts of bother, but the Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae bailouts have bolstered world markets, really.
Well, a 3-4% increase in markets around the globe. I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars of extra value created over the weekend simply because the US government has sacked the boards and management of the two companies which control $5 billion of American mortgages and written out a check for potentially $200 billion to bail out those institutions. So it's the world's biggest bailout. We've never seen anything quite like it. For decades, Freddie and Fannie have gone along with this implicit guarantee where, you know, oh, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, if things get into trouble, we'll get bailed out by the government. They were able to recklessly grow their market share to become just ridiculously huge, you know, 50% of the US mortgage market, and then you literally had trillions of dollars at risk because there was fears of default and you'd have had a calamity in global financial markets. So the US government has stepped in and the markets are relieved, although if you were a shareholder in Freddie or Fannie, last night the share prices of those two companies fell by 92% and 83% respectively. So you've literally seen the equivalent of National Australia, or equivalent of Commonwealth Bank and Westpac being wiped out overnight. So the two companies which will control 50% of Australia's home loan market is Westpac, post St George, and the CommBank. So just imagine those two banks being wiped out over the weekend, tens of billions of dollars of shareholder value just disappearing, and the government just coming in and saying, we're taking over, you're all sacked, here's $200 billion, and these are now basically government banks, which is what's happened. So just incredible development, but the markets loved it.
But how sustainable is it?
Well, you have to ask yourself the question about the US government's finances. I mean, the US government already has $5 trillion of government debt, and they're running a budget deficit of more than $400 billion a year, and now they're stepping in and also bailing out quasi-government instrumentalities that owe $5 trillion. So clearly, just like Nathan Rees, the next president of the United States and the next Congress is going to have to dramatically increase taxes and dramatically slash spending to bring about some financial balance to public finances in those two jurisdictions. And it will be very interesting to see what happens on both sides of the Pacific there, because they're very acute financial problems. And at one level, the market's relieved that the US government is bailing out Freddie and Fannie, but they don't have much money left in the tank, the US government. I mean, the US government just continues to borrow, and it's been running a budget deficit of 2% of GDP for 40 years, and you just can't keep doing that. So, welcome to the harsh reality of what McCain or Obama are going to have to do, which is going to be very unpleasant for Americans.
I hope they're tuning in. It's Stephen Mayne, founder of crikey.com.au, giving a few absolutely plain-spoken interpretations of movements all around the world on the markets and elsewhere. Stephen, it's interesting also that if Nathan Rees proceeds to the sell-off of New South Wales Power retailing businesses, someone's got a bag of cash.
Well, indeed. Sydney-based Origin Energy, which was spun out of Boral 8 or 9 years ago, has emerged as an absolutely giant energy company, courtesy of its gas reserves in Queensland, a gas which is a coal seam gas which is buried in coal reserves. And yesterday, a big tech company called ConocoPhillips has paid US $5 billion in cash up front just to buy 50% of the Origin Queensland gas interests. And there's another $3 billion or so to come when they build a huge LNG export facility in Gladstone over the next 6 or 7 years. So all of a sudden, Origin Energy has no debt. It's doing a massive buyback of its shares, and it's cashed up and keen to buy the New South Wales energy retailing business. So that's the one part of the power sector in New South Wales which potentially could still be sold. The Queenslanders very politically easily sold off their energy retailing businesses last year, again to Origin and AGL, and the argument went that maybe now wasn't a good time to sell because Origin didn't have that much spare capacity, but now, literally overnight, Origin is cashed up and keen to buy. So I would argue that selling off the retail side of the business makes a lot of sense for Nathan Rees, given the financial position that he finds himself in and the cash that Origin suddenly has.
But in the meantime, a Texan's come in and bought 50% of holdings of coal seam holdings in Queensland. The parade of foreign interests in the Australian resources sector continues, Stephen.
Well, it's just incredible. I mean, we've never seen a land grab quite like it. I mean, in its desperate rush for cash, the Yemen government actually received $300 million up front in the last few months from a Chinese company just for exploration rights over a 190 square kilometer tract of land up near Gunnedah. And last week, another Chinese government company paid $1.5 billion to a little-known Queensland company called Link Energy just to buy their coal exploration tenements in Queensland. So what we're seeing here is this huge interest, obviously, in operating mines, and the likes of Rio Tinto, any sort of coal mine or iron ore mine is booming. But we're now seeing huge prices being paid just for tenements, whether it's coal or gas. So, I mean, there is no LNG facility at the moment in Queensland, but this Texan company has just paid US $5 billion just for the gas reserves that will feed such a facility. And equally, we're seeing the Chinese investors paying massive amounts of money just for the right to look for coal in certain coal-rich areas. So it's a phenomenal cash rush that we're seeing into Australia as the world is hungry for energy, and Australia's obviously got this magnificent dowry of energy resources.
And of course, someone who's got a lot of the dowry is Western Australia. Colin Barnett might become the West Australian Premier. What impact might Colin Barnett have as Premier of Western Australia?
Well, there's a few things. The uranium stocks all rocketed yesterday, some of them up by as much as 30 or 40%, because Colin Barnett is in favour of uranium mining, and Alan Carpenter was proposing to legislate that uranium mining being banned. So the uranium stocks are very excited. But I think the more interesting story is actually what happens with BHP Billiton's $200 billion plus takeover bid for Rio Tinto, because Barnett, during the election campaign, went on the record saying that he was opposed to the takeover and that it would be unhealthy to have one company controlling 50% of mining and energy development and exports in the state of Western Australia. And he said that if this merger happened, well, then he would want to insist on higher royalty payments by this giant to give a bigger return to the state. So when you consider that the combined BHP and Rio are going to export $60 billion worth of iron ore out of Western Australia in calendar 2009, if Colin Barnett comes in and says we're going to jack up the royalty from, say, 3.75% to 5%, that's a billion-dollar hit, just like that. That's a straight billion-dollar hit on those companies. So Colin Barnett potentially could scupper the bid, because if he comes along and says, if you guys merge, I'm jacking up royalties, then it might make the merger uneconomic. So it's a very interesting development, the change of government in WA, in relation to both uranium and the attempt to create the world's biggest company, which is what BHP is trying to do with this Rio Tinto takeover.
Would you expect lobbying to start fairly soon, Stephen?
I think it will be very intense. And the other interesting thing is that WA is also hurtling down the debt path. I mean, all states, because they don't have much revenue bases, all states are borrowing huge amounts at the moment, and WA is borrowing many billions of dollars a year. And with the National Party demanding a quarter of all mining royalties go into the bush, I think you're going to see royalties on mining in WA rise anyway, just to fund greater development in services and the likes of the Pilbara and Kalgoorlie. Because, I mean, the National Party got 29% of the vote in the Pilbara from nothing. So clearly all those people up there in Port Hedland and places like that and Dampier are demanding decent health and education services, because they're providing all this wealth to the rest of the country. And I think you are going to see some wonderful investment in those regions, because the National Party's got the balance of power and they're going to force it to happen. And maybe you'll see some increases in taxes and royalties to pay for all that sort of extra service delivery and infrastructure investment in those regions.
Thanks very much for your time this morning, Stephen.
Thanks, Deborah.